The early saints took the physical appearance of Zion very seriously. Can we preach to the world by practice? Asked Brigham Young. Yes, we are preaching to them by setting out these shade trees. When they come here from the north, south, east, or west, they say, "Your city is a perfect paradise with its streams of water and beautiful shade trees down every street." The idea, according to Brigham Young, is to beautify the face of the earth until it becomes like the Garden of Eden. Again, Brigham says, "The city looks beautiful, the appearance of a huge flower garden. The shade trees, fountains of water, crystal streams, and every tree, shrub, and flower that will flourish in this climate to make our mountain home a paradise and our hearts wells of gratitude to the God of Joseph." Recently, Thord Heyerdahl testified before a Senate subcommittee that clearly the time has passed when ocean pollution was a mere offense to human aesthetics. Brigham Young knew, however, that a feeling for beauty was the surest guardian of survival. He said, "You watch your own feelings when you hear delightful sounds, for instance, or when you see anything beautiful. Are those feelings productive of misery? No, they produce happiness, peace, and joy." These feelings, according to Brigham, can be trusted, and without them we would soon destroy ourselves. "Man's machinery makes things alike," he says. "God's machinery gives to things which appear alike a pleasing difference. Now let us prove to the heavens that our minds are set on beauty and true excellence, so that we can become worthy to enjoy the society of angels." In paradise, as everybody knows, all creatures live together in peace. So too, in Zion, when it is restored to the earth, the lion shall lie down with the lamb. God's other creatures are an important part of the picture of heaven. A marvelous statement by Joseph Smith on this subject gives us a flash of insight into an amazing future. John learned that God glorified himself by saving all that his hands had made, whether beasts, fowls, fishes, or men, and he will glorify himself with them. Brigham Young said, "The millennium consists in this, every heart in the church and kingdom of God being united in one. All things else will be as they are now. We shall eat, drink, and wear clothing. Let the people be holy and filled with the Spirit of God, and every animal and creeping thing will be filled with peace. The soil of the earth will bring forth in its strength, and the fruits thereof will be meat for man." The Garden of Eden is not a one-crop enterprise. Everything grows there. Every living creature that moveth, and every winged fowl after its kind, all things which I had created were good. And I, God, blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply." And I, God, saw that all these things were good. It is significant that in the oldest traditions and records of the human race, all those men who turned against God and man are represented at the same time as making war against the animals, the birds, and the fishes, and destroying the forests and defiling the pure waters. This is told of Satan in the beginning, of Cain, of Ham, of Nimrod, of the Egyptian Seth, of the mad huntsman of the steppes, of Nebuchadnezzar, of Esau, of Caesar, of Assurbanipal, and so on, all of whom sought dominion over others, over all others, and to achieve it in only one way, by force. The code name for such an order of things and such a program is Babylon. We can't discuss Zion very long without running into Babylon, because Babylon is, in all things, the counterpart of Zion. It is described just as fully, clearly, and vividly in the Scriptures as Zion is, and usually in direct relationship to it. "By the rivers of Babylon we wept when we remembered Zion. They shall ask the way to Zion when word comes to remove out of the midst of Babylon. There will be the voice of them that flee out of the land of Babylon to declare in Zion the vengeance of the Lord, and deliver thyself, O Zion, that dwellest with the daughter of Babylon." So it goes on. Just as surely as Zion is to be established, Babylon is to be destroyed. "The burden of Babylon, howl ye, for the day of the Lord is at hand. It shall come as a destruction from the Almighty." Babylon is not to be converted. She's to be destroyed. We would have healed Babylon, but she is not healed. Forsake her. Today's world is the substance of an idol, which waxeth old and shall perish in Babylon, even Babylon the Great, which shall fall. "For after today cometh the burning, and I will not spare any that remain in Babylon." I could quote 100 scriptures to show that Babylon is nothing but the inverse image of Zion. Babylon is a state of mind, as Zion is, with its appropriate environment. Just like Zion, Babylon is a city. Babylon the Great is fallen. The great world center of commerce and business, the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. Indeed, thy merchants were the great men of the earth, for by thy sorceries were all nations deceived. Babylon's economy is built on deceptions. Babylon is described fully in Revelation 18. She is rich, luxurious, immoral, full of fornications, merchants, riches, delicacies, sins, merchandise, gold, silver, precious stones, pearls, fine linens, purples, silks, scarlets, thyine wood, all manner of vessels, ivory, precious woods, brass, iron, marble, and so on. She is a giant delicatessen, full of wine, oil, fine flour, wheat, a perfume counter with cinnamon, odors, ointments, and frankincense, a market with beasts and sheep. It reads like a savings stamp catalog or a guide to a modern supermarket or department store. Horses and chariots and all manner of services are available, slaves in the souls of men. These are the fruits thy soul lusted after, and all things which were dainty and goodly. And it is all for sale. O virgin daughter of Babylon, thou hast labored with thy merchants from thy youth. In her power and affluence she is unchallenged. For thou hast trusted in thy wickedness. Thou hast said, none seeth me. Thy wisdom and thy knowledge, it hath perverted thee. And thou hast said in thine heart, I am, and none else beside me. Babylon is number one. She dominates the world. Her king is equated to Lucifer, who says, I will be like the Most High, and all the nations are weakened at her expense. He was the man that made the earth to tremble, that did shake kingdoms, that made the world as a wilderness. The Lady of Kingdoms, who rules over polluted lands and says, I shall be a lady forever, she leads the world. The nations have drunken of her wine, therefore the nations are mad. Babylon the Great, all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. And when Babylon falls, all the world is involved. At the noise of the taking of Babylon, the earth is moved, and the cry is heard among the nations. And at Babylon shall fall the slain of all the earth. Her clever, experienced, and unscrupulous men will be helpless. She thinks she can get away with anything, and says, None seeth me. But thy wisdom and thy knowledge it hath perverted thee. And I will make drunk her men, and they shall sleep a perpetual sleep. Her military might is helpless. A sound of battle is in the land and of great destruction. How is the hammer of the whole earth cut asunder and broken? Babylon, then, like Zion, is a type. If Zion is wherever the celestial order prevails, Babylon is the culmination of the worldly power wherever it happens. Through the ages, that power has actually culminated in just such world centers as ancient Babylon. Rome itself was entirely eligible for the name. The Church of Rome called itself the Church that is at Babylon. Rome was Babylon the Great in every respect. And in the last days we must have a Babylon too. For the call has gone forth. Go ye out of Babylon, be ye clean that bear the vessels of the Lord. Go ye out of Babylon, gather ye out from among the nations. Go ye out from among the nations, even from Babylon, from the midst of wickedness, which is spiritual Babylon. It is important in building up Zion and preparing for paradise to keep an eye on Babylon, because the saints have always had a habit of subsiding into the ways of Babylon. Joseph Smith stood up on the framework of a new school building that was being erected in far west Missouri and told the brethren, Brethren, we are gathering to this beautiful land to build up Zion. But instead, he says, I see signs put out, beer signs, speculative schemes are being introduced. This is the ways of the world. Babylon indeed, and I tell you in the name of the God of Israel, if there is no repentance and a turning from such ungodliness, covetousness, and self-will, you will be broken up and scattered from this choice land to the four winds of heaven. Saints start out building up Zion and end up building Babylon. Brigham Young said exactly the same thing, in language just as strong, when the saints got to the valley. Have we not brought Babylon with us? Are we not promoting Babylon here in our midst? Are we not fostering the spirit of Babylon that is now abroad on the face of the whole earth? I ask myself this question, and I answer, yes, yes, we have too much of Babylon in our midst. It is hard for us to envisage the concept of Zion, let alone paradise, when we have been so long accustomed to living in Babylon. We are disquieted by vague images of people wandering around in gardens, apparently with nothing to do. Far more appealing to us are the vigor and give-and-take and drama of the marketplace. We are still like the little boy who likes to break the bottles. The world today is about as different from Zion as any world possibly can be. In fact, it has reached the point, the Lord has told us in emphatic terms, where He is about to remove the whole thing, sweep the slate clean, that Zion may be established. Just as the order of Zion began with Adam in the garden, the rival system is just as old. It too was proposed to Adam, and he rejected it, while his son Cain accepted it. The plan Satan proposed to Adam was to put everything in this glorious and beautiful world up for sale. You could have anything in this world for money, but you had to have money. This launched a scramble that has gone on ever since Cain slew Abel, his brother, for gain. And he, says the pearl of great price, gloried in that which he had done, saying, I am free. Surely the flocks of my brother falleth into my hands. And this vigorous competition has imparted an air of dynamism and excitement to the scene that some find most attractive. What would the human drama be to us without an element of conflict and competition? We would find it insufferably dull. Who would exchange this for the pale and bloodless activities of Eden? In the Book of Mormon, the Nephites, the Jaredites, and the Jews at Jerusalem all walked straight to their certain destruction because they were helpless to conceive of acting in any other way. They were so completely captivated by one way of life that they could not conceive of any other. Laman and Lemuel saw nothing but visionary insanity in the teachings of their father and of their brother Nephi. When Mormon suggested wisdom and restraint to the Nephites, they became hysterical and furious with him. They were so hypnotized by the necessity of what they were doing that they didn't even let the fear of death deter them, he says. The Jaredites fought to the last man for nothing rather than change their ways. They were reduced to the nightmare of private shelters and total insecurity, and finally, total destruction. This is what the Greeks called aute, the point of no return, beyond which it becomes impossible to change, and only one solution to a problem remains possible. You simply have to play out the play to the end the way you've been doing it. Whether or not this is the state of the present world, it is important before it is too late to point out that there are alternatives to Babylon. We should not be condemned because they are so different from what we've been accustomed to. There is an unbridgeable gap between Zion and Babylon. We cannot compromise on the two ways because the two ways lead in opposite directions. In recent years, the course of the whole world has suddenly and dramatically vindicated the position taken by the early saints and largely forgotten by their descendants. We are discovering that there really are two worlds, that the one leads to sure destruction, written in capital letters on everything we behold, as Joseph Smith put it, and only the other offers salvation. This is the ancient doctrine of the two ways taught in the early church, the way of darkness and the way of light. It was impossible to try to compromise between them because they led in opposite directions. Yet in the ancient church, it was the compromisers, the diophysites, who won. When we try to mix Zion and Babylon, Babylon has already won the game. It is amazing that any teaching so fundamental and so clear-cut could be so effectively silenced today among people professing to preach and to practice the restored gospel. Here is an example from President Joseph F. Smith of what I mean. Our innocent little birds, natives of our country, who live upon the vermin, are indeed enemies to the farmer and to mankind. It is not only wicked to destroy them, it is abominable, in my opinion. I think that this principle should extend not only to the bird life, but to the life of all animals. I never could see why a man should be imbued with a bloodthirsty desire to kill and destroy animal life. I have known men, and they still exist among us, who enjoy what is, to them, the sport of hunting birds. I think it is wicked for men to thirst in their souls to kill almost everything which possesses animal life. It is wrong, and I have been surprised at prominent men whom I have seen whose very souls seem to be athirst for the shedding of animal blood. They go off hunting deer, antelope, elk, anything they can find. And what for? Just for the fun of it. Here is a practice designated by the president and prophet of the church as abominable, the ancient sport of the masters of Babylon, the descendants of Cain, of Ham, of Nimrod, all of whom were mighty hunters. And yet there are men today engaging in such practices who at the same time speak piously of building up Zion. How is this possible? It is the old word game of the early Christians and of others. In the newly discovered Gospel of Philip, there is a wonderful passage describing how Satan rules this world by the skillful manipulation of labels. In this world, we communicate through symbols, through labels, it explains. Therefore, in this, Satan possesses a powerful tool to comfort the wicked, enabling them to discredit the righteous and to brand the righteous with whatever epithets suit them and to unload their own guilt on others. Today, as in the ancient church, those who embrace Babylon in its stark reality do not renounce Zion. They don't need to. As the great apostasy progressed, the Christian world got ever more mileage out of the name of Christianity. As the apostolic fathers and the early apologists observed, the farther they fall away from real Christianity, the more loudly they proclaim and the more enthusiastically they display the name and the banner of Christ. Christianity became an impressive pompa, a military parade rallying the righteous against the wicked. Finally, all you had to do to be righteous was to wave the flag of Christianity. As these early church fathers say, the word Christian completely lost its meaning. Today, the beautiful word Zion, with all its emotional and historical associations, is used as the name Christian was formerly used, to put the stamp of sanctity on whatever men choose to do. The Hebrew word for financial activity of any kind is mamonut, and the financier is a mamonai. That is, financing is, quite frankly, in that honest language, the business of mammon. From the very first, there were Latter-day Saints who thought to promote the cause of Zion by using the methods of Babylon. Indeed, once the saints were told to make friends with the mammon of unrighteousness, but that was only to save their lives in an emergency. We have the word of the prophet Joseph that Zion is not to be built up by using the methods of Babylon. He says, "Here are those who begin to spread out, buying up all the land they are able to do, to the exclusion of the poorer ones, who are not so much blessed with this world's goods, thinking to lay foundations for themselves only, looking to their own individual families and those who are to follow them. Now I want to tell you that Zion cannot be built up in any such way." What do we find today? Zion's investment, Zion used cars, Zion construction, Zion development, Zion bank, Zion leasing, Zion insurance, Zion securities, Zion trust, and so on. The institutions of mammon are made respectable by the beautiful name of Zion. Zion and Babylon both have their appeal, but the voice of Latter-day Revelation makes one thing perfectly clear, as it tells us over and over again that we cannot have them both. Let us go back to the beginning of this latter-day work. When the youthful Joseph Smith began to think about those things, he went to his knees in the sacred grove. He said, "This was a grief to my soul. Thus from the age of 12 years to 15, I pondered many things in my heart concerning the situation of the world, of mankind, the contentions and divisions, the wickedness and abominations, and the darkness which pervaded the minds of mankind, my mind become exceedingly distressed." He found himself in a wicked world, yet the natural world surrounding him was one of heavenly beauty. "I looked upon the sun, the glorious luminary of the earth, and also the moon rolling in their majesty through the heavens, and also the stars shining in their courses, and the earth also upon which I stood, and the beast of the field, and the fowls of heaven, and the fish of the waters, and also man walking forth upon the face of the earth, in majesty, and in the strength of beauty, whose power and intelligence in governing the things which are so exceeding great and marvelous, even in the likeness of him who created them, And when I considered upon these things, my heart exclaimed, Well hath the wise men said. It is a fool that saith in his heart, There is no God. My heart exclaimed, All these bear testimony, and bespeak an omnipotent and omnipresent power. What was young Joseph's problem when he compared the world that God had made to the world that man had made? One is the world as it should be, the other the world as it should not be. The boy's feelings in the matter were confirmed from the mouth of the Lord himself, who spoke to him in the grove, and note well, it was in a grove of trees that the father and the son appeared to Joseph, saying, Behold, the world lieth in sin at this time, and none doeth good, no, not one. And mine anger is kindled against the inhabitants of the earth, to visit them according to their ungodliness. Well, here we have it. The world we have made and are making is not the world God meant us to have, and the world He made for us in the beginning is the world we must have. With our present limited knowledge, we could devise a perfectly practical order of things in which there would be no need for doctors, lawyers, insurance men, dentists, auto mechanics, beauticians, generals, real estate men, prostitutes, garbage men, and used car salesmen. Their work is justified as an unpleasant necessity. Yet there have been successful human societies in which none of those professions existed, any more than dukes, earls, and kings need to exist in our society. Nature around us, such of it as has remained, admonishes us that paradise is a reality. Through modern revelations, we have learned that Zion also is a reality. Paradise is the proper environment of Zion. Here we are faced with a clear-cut proposition that recent developments of world history, if nothing else, admonish us we can no longer afford to ignore. The 10th article of faith contains our future, our glory, or our condemnation.
This is the end of this recording. Thank you for being with us. For additional information on this and other Farms publications, call Farms at 1-800-327-6715. 1-800-FARMS-15. You can also reach our website at farmsresearch.com or visit your local LDS bookstore.